Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to Now That's What I Call the Very Best of What If... Season 1, Volume 3. Oh yes indeed, folks. If you have listened to these shows previously, then you will know the drill by now. Now that a big old Disney Plus, Marvel or Star Wars show has come to an end, we are going to get together and talk about our favorite moments from that season, and we're going to intersperse excerpts from an interview that I have done with the show's creative team as we talk. Sound good?
Amazing.
Yeah. So.
Sounds amazing. Those voices you've heard, you may be thinking to yourself, was that the voice of Empire's Geek Queen, Helen O'Hara?
Yes.
Was that the voice of the best-dressed man in film journalism, Amon Warman? And was that the voice of the nicest man in showbiz, Ben Travis?
Yeah.
Well, no, because we couldn't actually afford them. But what we're getting is pretty decent sound-alikes for the next hour or so. So welcome all. Welcome, jobbing actors. How are you all?
And we are the guardians of the Podverse.
That's the worst band I've ever heard.
But my Amon is pretty good.
Wait a minute. I can do Helen.
Okay.
Women! Women are brilliant! Done.
I mean, I'm sorry. All I heard was Helen there. That's amazing.
Down with the patriarchy!
God bless you for thinking there are jobbing actors who are cheaper than us.
Jobbing actors heard we were paying for this this 1 hour thing. Ben's going, hang on, there's payment for this. Sorry, Ben, we're on staff. It doesn't trickle down to us. The trickle down economics doesn't apply to this podcast for us, I'm afraid. Jobbing actors heard what the going rate was and told me to go stuff myself. So there you go. So anyway, we are joined by the actual Helen O'Hara. Hello.
Hello.
The actual Amon Warman. Hello.
Hello.
And someone pretending to be Ben Travis. Hello.
Hello. I'm doing a better job.
Okay.
Hey, what's up with this podcast? It's Ben Travis here. I'm from Nottingham.
Anyway, so the format of this is very, very simple. We're going to be chatting about our favorite moments from What If, which is a show that I think we started out, we've already talked about this on a What If spoiler special that's available to spoiler special subscribers. So we talked about how we kind of went into the show thinking it would be a little bit, you know, just fun every week. A little bit inessential, but the sort of thing you could maybe catch up with. And then gradually it began to reveal it was all part of one connected shared narrative that may or may not have repercussions on the actual MCU. So it is very much worth talking about. Had a lot of fun episodes and a lot of fun moments. And as I say, studded in between our chat about these moments is going to be a few excerpts from an interview I did last week with the show's head writer, A.C. Bradley, and the show's director, Brian Andrews. I spoke to them both together. You'll be able to hear that interview in full on our spoiler special channel, that is for spoiler special subscribers. So if you don't already subscribe, if you haven't already signed up, then do come on in. The water's lovely. You can find out all the details on empireonline.com/spoiler specials, or you can go to my pinned tweet. I'm at Chris Hewitt for more details of how to do that. Anyway, first up, general thoughts about the show, general feelings about the show for those who didn't hear us talk on the spoiler special. What do we make of What If? And did your feelings about the show change over the course of its 9 episodes?
Yes.
Thanks, Helen.
Yes. No, look, I liked it, some episodes more than others. I got very weary in the middle with every episode ending on a complete downer of a note. I thought that was boring, ultimately.
It's the EastEnders gambit, is what they call it in TV.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason I don't watch EastEnders, you know, like, give me a happy ending now and again. Not that kind, Chris.
Hey, come on now.
Like your mind wasn't there. Anywho.
I was actually trying to think of a joke about Spurs. This is much like being a Spurs fan. If you're watching the Spurs game, end badly as well.
End badly.
Except they're doing all right this season. Not a Spurs fan.
Okay. But yeah, so I got bored of the string of 3 or 4 very downbeat endings in a row. And then, they were building to something, they did something with it. But I kind of wish that What If had been a little bit more pure almost and just been a string of what ifs and just completely unconnected and wild and crazy and fun and silly. And, you know, that might have been fun. But, you know, this is what we got. So God knows it has worked pretty well for Marvel so far.
I sort of totally agree and kind of disagree with that in that I feel the same way. I was kind of mixed on the show all the way through. I liked the first couple of episodes. I liked the remix factor. It felt like an MCU remix. And then that middle run of episodes, they were all a bit downbeat. And I still wasn't really vibing with the animation style. I'm not a huge fan of of the character models and the cel-shaded style that they went with. But then as the series amped up, as it started to get interconnected, as the Watcher became more of the doer, and we had that kind of couple of episode arc, really, I started to get really invested. And it felt like it really lent into the sort of animated properties in those final episodes to do stuff that would be difficult to do on this scale in live action. So I kind of would have loved it to have been completely standalone and not meant anything. And at the same time, my favorite bits were the ones that led up to something bigger. But I think there was loads of good stuff in there, and nice to see them trying something different, trying what feels like a narrative experiment and trying to give these things stakes that make you care. Because as soon as you do alt universe stuff, it's kind of hard to grapple onto it or to find a reason to be really invested. And I felt that by the end, they had achieved that.
I liked it for the most part, for all the reasons you say. With a title like What If, that is sort of licensed to do things that are not possible in what I call the MCU Prime universe. And I feel like we've got a nice variety of that across a huge number of characters. My main issue with it was that in a number of episodes, the storytelling felt very rushed, like they were trying to pack so much in. And because of that, a lot of what they were trying to do didn't land as effectively as it could and as it should have. But for the most part, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the escalating nature of the cosmic battles, which for me were probably my favorite element of the show. And yeah, I like the interconnected nature of it, and I think it pays off in the end too.
I really liked the way that it played on our affection for and our knowledge of the MCU. So twisting and tweaking moments and outcomes just a smidge, but just enough to make it interesting. Do you think, though, before we get into our favorite moments, and I'm going to get moments from each of you, do you think that it might have swung for the fences and feared away from the MCU a little bit and maybe introduced a character or two that we hadn't really met before in the MCU? I mean, there's the Watcher. Yeah. Obviously, we've met the Watcher for the first time properly. There were Watchers, of course, glimpsed very briefly in Guardians 2 at the end. One of the post-credit things at the end of Guardians 2 is Stan Lee talking to a whole bunch of Watchers. So they have been in the MCU before, but this is the Watcher. This is Uatu. This is the comics version of the Watcher, given a Jeffrey Wright upgrade. And rightly so as well. There's a pun there. But apart from that, do you think that they might have really gone for it? You know, this might have been a way of introducing the Fantastic Four or how we're doing an X-Men episode.
I think the problem, basically, the starriness of the voice cast, I think, was both a massive advantage in many ways and a bar to them doing that, because they taught us to expect, if not the person who played it in the live-action universe, at least a sound-alike. Having that as their kind of guiding principle means it was always less likely, I guess, that they were going to introduce new major Marvel characters. Because Jeffrey Wright, I would imagine, has a little clause in his contract somewhere saying that he's, you know, first choice if they put the Watcher in the live action universe as well. But they won't want to cast the likes of the X-Men or the Fantastic Four that way. And they won't, given this model, necessarily want to cast randoms in those roles, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. Like, you know, we've said this before on various podcasts, but the engagement on What If has not been the same engagement as the other sort of, you know, TV shows or Marvel films. And I don't think you want to introduce them, you know, the likes of Fantastic Four or X-Men in this show for that reason. I do expect that we will see them in What If in future seasons once they're introduced in sort of the MCU Prime to the universe properly. But yeah, I think now would be too early for that.
All right, so that's still, yeah, okay, that's fair. And I was just throwing it out there for discussion. No, but absolutely. Do you think also, Amon, you mentioned there that, you know, the engagement around the show, I think it's fair to say, has not hit the levels of the live action shows. I think a lot of people felt, and we stopped doing weekly spoiler specials for this because we thought it was just going to be a fun, inessential show that you could catch up with when you felt like it, that it didn't demand your attention on a weekly basis. Do you think that they should have revealed earlier that it was all interconnected? Because they don't really do that until the penultimate episode. There's a hint at the end of the Thor episode, which is episode 7, that, you know, when we see Vision Ultron turn up, or, you know, Infinity Ultron turn up, if you want to call him that, and you go, oh, what the hell's going on here? But it, you know, it doesn't really get picked up until the next episode.
I think, like, they got the memo on that midway through the season, because it wasn't actually the sort of, you know, episodes themselves that revealed that first revealed that it was interconnected. They revealed it in the mid-season trailer after like episode 5 or so, and that was when it became
which
clear.
Which I didn't see and wasn't aware of.
Okay. Yeah, which I probably, you know, regret watching, because, you know, I would have liked to have been surprised about that. Do I think they should have revealed it? It's an interesting question. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that would have got more eyeballs, right? That would have got more.
I don't know that it would have. I think it might have made it feel like homework even more than it kind of did sometimes. I just, the problem with the interconnectedness, like, I didn't necessarily get it from Infinite Ultron turning up, simply because every episode at that point was ending on a downer. So I was like, oh, look, another downer. There's a shock. You know, it didn't seem surprising to me at all. So those didn't necessarily clearly set anything up to me. They just seemed monotonous and sad. That's harsh, but fair. So I don't know that it would have. I think it might have made it feel like, oh God, so I've got to watch every episode of this just to figure out what's happening. You know, people have stuff going on, even now, when we're not allowed out of our houses as much. And I feel like people might not want to.
I feel like that's why. That's an element of why people are excited about Marvel stuff, though, because it's all interconnected.
Yeah, but there's a difference. There's a difference between, you know, building up over a period of years leisurely, and then, you know, every single thing having to build to some kind of crossover climax. I genuinely think there's a big difference between building to Infinity War and Endgame the way that they did, and having every single thing have to have some kind of interconnectivity, because at some point it does become exhausting. This is what puts people off getting into comics. It's this endless kind of homework that you have to do, and there have to be standalone stories. And I honestly thought this was going to be a standalone story. This, above all things, was going to be standalone stuff. So yeah, for me, it would not have made me want to watch it more.
I think there is a pull to the sense of things, if there being a bigger plan, if there being a bigger story, even just not necessarily connecting to wider MCU stuff, but just within this series itself, I think there's something in that. And I think it just speaks to that they may be just slightly miscalibrated this one, in that I like the idea of it being a surprise towards the end of the season. I have to say, for me, we got the first three episodes for review, and I watched the first three, and when the third episode was, what if we killed all the Avengers? It suddenly kind of came into my head of, oh, will this be about building a different lineup of Avengers, some kind of other team up? So I kind of had that idea early on. But I like the idea of, do you know what, towards the end of the series, you're going to get a bit of a payoff of, actually, these aren't all standalone. But I think the fact that it didn't grab people's imaginations or necessarily pull viewers in through that whole ride running up to that then meant that it became this kind of, oh no, you should catch up on this because it leads to something, rather than, oh, these are really great in their own right anyway, I'm having a really fun time watching them every week, and now I've got this bonus surprise that actually it all connects. Because as much as I love this stuff and I did enjoy these episodes, there are some that I really, really liked, I didn't feel that rush of appointment viewing just in their quality in their own right of, oh, I need to get up and watch this as soon as I can because I'm so excited to see what they do with it this week. I was just enjoying it every week. And when I had the time, when I was able to catch up on, if I had half an hour at lunch, oh, I'll stick on What If. That came out the other day. So I don't think it had that big hit in the sense that they thought it would. But I do think there is something enjoyable in the fact that the payoff for the series is, even just within this kind of corner of the universe or multiverse, there is something wider going on.
Interesting. Fair enough. Fair enough. But of course, this is the very best of what if. Sorry, now that's what I call the very best of what if. ... Volume 3. So let's get into it now. Let's talk about our favorite moments from the show. Ordinarily, I'd have asked you to write down lists. I'm sure you all did anyway. I'm sure you're all diligent and did your homework. Let's start with Amon. Let's talk about a moment, a favorite moment from any of the 9 episodes.
I am going to start with Uatu versus Ultron, because that sort of really, when, as Ben says, he stopped watching, sort of started getting involved. And, you know, that line he has sort of during the fight, like, you cannot compute the power of my will. And then he sort of changes, you know, he gets his armor on. The music, you know, goes to another level. The music by Laura Carpenter, by the way, she mentioned, is very, very good all the way throughout. And she has that Watcher theme sort of at the start of every episode. And that theme sort of, you know, gets like a really sort of cool sort of lift in that moment. It's a bit negated by the fact that he gets his ass handed to him immediately afterwards. Immediately after he says that line. But it's really sort of cool.
I can compute the power of your will, as it turns
really
out.
Can. But it's still very, very, very cool, and I enjoyed that moment.
I like the build up to that moment as well, because you've had various points, as we talked about in the main spoiler podcast, of a couple of the characters at points. Maybe I think Doctor Strange at some point goes like, "Oh, who's this up here? Who's narrating in the sky?" Yeah. And that moment though, where the Watcher basically just shits himself when he sees Ultron really see him, and you feel him just go. Mm. Yeah.
It's basically, it's George McFly falling out of the tree in Back to the Future is what it is. You know, it's the voyeur getting caught.
Mm-hmm. Hang on. So are you suggesting the Watcher is sneaking up the branch of reality to mm-hmm. have a wank over what Ultron's like, doing?
Your words, Chris, not mine.
Because that's not being around the bush here, Helen. That's what George McFly is about to do in Back to the Future. He's about to
beating
rub
around
one out
the
in
bush.
A tree. Yes, he's about to beat around the bush. Helen O'Hara, or an actress who sounds just like Helen O'Hara. I am disgusted and appalled, but also a little bit impressed. Well,
thanks.
Done. Yeah.
I've been working with you now for way too long.
It's osmosis. Yes, that is a great moment. I really like that moment. And thank you for suggesting it, because as chance would have it, we have AC Bradley and Brian Andrews talking about that exact moment when the Watcher, his presence is sensed by Ultron. Here it is, folks.
In the past, the Watcher has been handled as just this omnipotent thing that is like distant and removed. And I don't think any of us are really fully into that idea. We've seen that. We've been there, done that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. The notion that he has a personality, he might actually have an opinion, and that he loves the stories is so great. The fact that he is us, and being able to hold a mirror up to that and nerd out. I think even some fans online at times when they're watching the show, they point that out as well, you know, and feel, especially those later episodes when he reacts to certain things that he didn't see coming and wants to get involved, seeing some of the chats that spawn from that and having people go, he's reacting like us. He is us, you know. Mm-hmm. That's hilarious, because people are vibing it the same way that we intended it to be.
Absolutely. I love the there's two holy shit moments for him whenever whenever Strange Supreme senses his presence, and then whenever Ultron obviously senses his presence and then goes about ruining his day in a very, very interesting way. Can you talk about those two moments, where that idea came from, that he's a being that's almost outside reality, but he can be detected. He can be influenced. He can be a participant.
Well, before the aforementioned Tony Stark episode got pushed to season 2, Doctor Strange was episode 5. That was our midpoint. Mm-hmm. So we love the idea that in that episode is when someone finally senses the Watcher, that we kind of get this moment of connection, that the Watcher joins our stories as more than a narrator for the first time. Because in the comic books, he does. And usually when the Watcher makes himself known is on these universe-ending events, in this Strange counted. And the idea that Strange Supreme had now elevated himself so far from where we know the regular Doctor Strange, that he's absorbed so much power that he can kind of sense the Watcher. sense this being that's stronger than everything was kind of a nice moment and a nice way of signaling that he's changed so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of just like there was a panel in one of the original What Ifs, and I think it might have been either like Hank Pym or Reed Richards who's in the panel, but it was this giant watcher, like this 50-foot-tall watcher next to this small person, and it was just this great stark image. And I was like, we want to show that. We want to see a moment of that. And it kind of fell together with Doctor Strange, because that whole episode is basically, it's a tragedy because he's warned over and over. He's warned by Wong. He's warned by the Ancient One, by himself, by Obane / Cagliostro. And he just fails to listen.
Yeah.
And then mm-hmm. even the Watcher is standing there going, we sent you everything. The universe gave you every chance and you just kept saying no. So why should I say yes?
Yeah.
And then having that occur in episode 5, then when we're breaking the story and figuring out stuff for, you know, the Ultron episode, you know, the fact that he can take out his whole universe and things get so quiet and he's starting to reach that cosmic awareness and stuff that he can, the notion of like that he's narrating and that the Vision Ultron is like, what, who is that? It just came and it's like, oh yeah, we got, this is how you have to do it. Like he's just narrating and he's just like, who the hell is talking? You know, it's like, what the hell is this? You know?
Well, the fun of that moment was we were talking about like, what would it take for the Watcher to break his oath? And he doesn't actually break his oath in that episode. He's forced into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ultron comes after him.
Yeah.
And so his breaking his oath is really in episode 9, because that was kind of a nice moment of like, he doesn't actually have to make the choice. The choice comes to him. Mm-hmm. And that's such a shock because you're waiting for him to choose to interfere. It's like, no, no, no. The fight's coming. Like the punch is landing on his face. Like he's not getting a say in this.
Yeah.
And that was very much a very freeing decision and then a very, very amazing moment to get to show.
Yeah.
All right. Yes. So Amon's first moment has been chosen. Helen has clearly not done her homework. She's going to be working on a list while Ben...
I'm ready.
Well, Ben is talking about his first moment.
I'm ready
Ben.
With a very unsurprising answer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right, Ben, sorry, you're out of the picture.
Benched. Helen, I have not been chosen, apparently. The Watcher said, oh, no, you can sit down. This is fine.
Go on, help.
My favorite moment was brave little Steve turning up in the Hydra Stomper.
Oh, of course it was. You are such a cliche.
I was literally messaging my sister going, so brave. Look at his little face.
So brave and
so
tiny.
So brave and tiny.
I also got that message.
Brave little toaster. I just thought that... That understanding of his essential nature, I thought was brilliantly, brilliantly done. And the fact that, you know, there was maybe a little bit of a not upset, but a little bit of disappointment when Peggy got the power and he didn't, but no big deal. And he just accepts her and he supports her and he's just still Steve. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Obviously.
Yeah. And she falls head over heels for him.
Of
despite the fact that
does.
He looks like that.
Yeah.
He's a little scrawny, little 5 foot nothing fella. He could barely lift up a dustbin lid.
So brave.
So brave. So brave.
What that clearly indicates, Chris, is that Steve Rogers got game.
I mean, look, I've talked to other women about this. Like, the consensus is she was planning to jump him even before the serum hit. I mean,
she would have broken him.
Look at that. Okay, not, I mean, when she hit the serum and he didn't, maybe. But, I mean, look at that scene in the car. There's a spark there. I'm just saying.
There is a spark, yeah. But she would have snapped him in two, Helen.
Well, he would have had fun, though.
He would have died happy.
That's why he immediately hopped in the Hydra Stomper. He was like, this is the only way that I'm not going to get shattered into a million pieces.
Yes, indeed. The Hydra Stomper. Great euphemism. The Hydra Stomper. I don't have AC Bradley or Brian Andrews talking about the Hydra Stomper, sadly. But nevertheless, a good moment, a good Steve Rogers-centric moment. Did you like any other Steve Rogers moments, Helen, during the what about the bit where he was one of the first Avengers to be turned into a zombie? Did
I didn't
you
like that
bit?
No, I didn't. No. No, I did not like that. No, do not like
no,
it.
No, did not. No, hard pass. No, hard pass. Nope. No, thank you. No, thank you.
Mm-mm.
I did like the moment where he was about to be sworn in as President of the United States.
That was fun. Yeah.
That was cool.
That was more believable than the zombie thing.
Wishful thinking. Now, do you think that the zombie virus would have overcome the super soldier serum that is coursing through Steve Rogers' veins so readily.
Oh, into a quantum virus, of course it would. Oh, I can't be having with zombieism in Marvels. I'm sorry, I don't like it.
Just not having it. Just not. No,
I refuse.
Nope.
Well, you've set me up. If you do want to choose me now, Chris, Helen has set me up for a moment.
Thanks, Ben. That's really, really good. Okay, so I'm going to go let the wheel fall where it may. I'm on. No! It is time now. No! No, I'm only kidding. Ben.
So my moment will be from the Zombies episode, and it was a moment that I felt sad about, but was a cool visual and something that I didn't really expect going into this, which is a giant zombie wasp in terms of giving you like cool...
You just described my nightmare.
Oh my god,
a giant zombie wasp?
But wouldn't that mean normal size zombie Sonny Birch by extension?
Oh my god, no. Sonny Birch would never be turned into a zombie. He's far too smart and slippery. He's one step ahead of the zombies at every turn.
Is he?
He's slightly vulnerable though because he's not wearing socks.
Mm-hmm.
So
bite him on his ankle. You know,
he would avoid all the zombies, but then like stub his toe, and then like a bit of zombie blood would get into his toe, and that's how he becomes a zombie.
Ew.
So is that it?
Yes.
So
zombie wasp.
Moment with the giant zombie wasp.
Giant zombie wasp was like a really really cool image. They kind of hit that emotional beat quite nicely of hope, basically sacrificing herself so that they could get away. And I mean, in terms of the zombie stuff, it's quite fun that they still have their powers. Obviously they really play up the zombie Scarlet Witch as a threat, have the zombiness added to gigantic wasp causing havoc, stood around all the other zombies, was a very cool image.
I love the connection that Hope has with Spidey in that episode. Really sweet. Very sort of sister, brother type thing. Yeah. I like that.
Spidey and Bucky were both cute in that episode.
Only one episode, unless I'm wrong, someone can correct me on this, only one episode with Peter Parker. Am I right? Or am
I
wrong?
That is correct.
That is correct, right?
Yeah. I believe so, yeah.
Now, is he the least used heavy hitter?
I would say yes. Hulk wasn't much in it either.
Ruffalo's in two episodes, so he's in... Ruffalo's not in two episodes. No, he is in two episodes. No, he's not in two episodes.
Well, this is
no,
fun.
No, he is in two episodes. Well, Hulk's in two episodes. Hulk's in the... He's in the episode three with Hank Pym trying to kill all the Avengers. And he's in episode five, where he actually gets to do a little bit of business, and then, the Hulk actually finally... He does what he doesn't do in Infinity War, and he comes to the rescue at the end. So that's good. So Tony, as we've said in the spoiler special, and in fact, I'm gonna lead into a little bit of an excerpt from AC Bradley and Brian Andrews in a second. But Tony is in a bunch of episodes and ends up dying horribly in every single one of them. Steve's in a couple of episodes, isn't he? Yes, he is. Captain Marvel's in a couple of episodes. Thor's in a couple of episodes. Doctor Strange, obviously. T'Challa, obviously. Four episodes for Chadwick Boseman. His swan song, ultimately, as an actor. So that means, of the mainstay hardcore Avengers, there's only one Peter Parker. There's only one Peter Parker. He swings. He swings when he wants. Peter Parker. He swings when he wants. Oh dear. Yes. Only one Peter Parker. So that's interesting. Why is that?
Sony? I don't know.
Sony, you think Sony?
I mean, I certainly think Sony, the contract with Sony may have limited Tom Holland from being involved, potentially.
I haven't seen
his contract. I don't know, but it's possible.
Hudson Thames was fantastic as Peter Parker.
To the point where you thought it was Tom Holland.
I really, really did. I was shocked when I saw that it wasn't.
I thought it was more like Tom Sweden or Tom Denmark, but it wasn't too far off.
It was really good.
Yeah. Good sound-alikes indeed, including Mick Wingert. Oh my god, you're going to love the segue. Mick Wingert, who is the voice of Tony Stark / Iron Man in What If, and he replaces Robert Downey Jr. in a few episodes, to the point where, such a good impression that occasionally you thought, how are they just reusing dialogue from Iron Man here? No, it's Mick Wingert doing a really, really good RDJ. And as I said before, Tony Stark... doesn't fare so well in episodes of What If? And that was one of the very first things that I asked AC Bradley and Brian Andrews about, or quite frankly, I took them to task on their quite frankly shocking treatment of Tony Stark. Here's the response. Enjoy. What do you guys have against Tony Stark?
I love Tony Stark. Seeing Iron Man for the first time back in my 20s, I'm pretty sure I saw it with a hangover at the ArcLight in Hollywood. It was the first. It was one of the first times a movie had been able to combine the superhero storytelling with such great character work. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really a character story, and then there just happens to be all this great action around it. Mm-hmm. And I came out of that theater going, "This is what I want to do. This is what I want to write. How the hell do I get in that room?" And it took me about over 10 years to get there. But I was so happy to be on What If. And the first time I got to write Interior Avengers Tower, I mean, you write that and then you get up and you go get a glass of water because it's a little much. So we love Tony Stark. I personally love Tony Stark as a person with daddy issues. Yeah. We had a great episode that was featuring Tony that sadly got pushed to season two. Yeah. And to be honest, because that was always our focal point and that's the story of Tony we really wanted to tell, aside from the Killmonger episode, it was never intentional. It's just the way it ended up playing because of COVID production issues.
It's just you know, every time Tony appears this season, apart from that one brief glimpse in the last episode, you guys kill him. You kill him and usually horribly as well. I mean, poor guy. What's he done?
He's the best.
Yeah.
It's
somehow it just turned out that way. It wasn't meant to be that. You know, when we had the original 30 ideas to give to Kevin, there was other episodes where Tony might pop up or be a part of, et cetera. But the ones that just got chosen, you know, had a little bit of that ancillary effect. And you realize when they're all bumped up against each other, you're like, oh, my goodness, this is happening. But as Ashley stated, it's like the edge would have been, it would have felt much differently if we were able to have that one episode in where we wanted it. It was strategically placed to feel like you get plenty of Tony and, you know, it takes the edge off the rest. But unfortunately, because of COVID and other issues, they had to move. And that upset the equilibrium a little bit. So, yeah. But it wasn't on purpose. Yeah.
So, Chris, were you saying in terms of the Tom Holland voice, it was close, but it could have been Tom Hollander? Just to check.
Yes.
No, he sounds completely different.
Whereas if they had got the actual Tom Holland, and by that, of course, I mean the noted historian, then that would have been Tom Holland-est, you see. You know, or perhaps they could have got someone else. Oh, I don't know. The bloke who fixed James Dyer's roof, or the former, I presume it's the former, or Ipswich Town footballer, Tom Holland. There's another one, isn't there? There's another one that we're missing. There's Tom Holland, the director of Fright Night.
We need to assemble them all.
Happy birthday to that joke.
The guardians of the Tom Hollands. You have been chosen.
Yes.
Instead, they got Hudson Thames, who only sounds Tom Holland-esque.
I don't know him.
Holland, is that his name? What's his name? Hudson Thames.
Is it Thames?
This is a human being. This is a person. Let's just talk about this for a second before we choose another minute. Hudson Thames.
Yep,
you're shitting me. Really?
Americans have like names. You know, it's weird.
Two of the great rivers of the world. What are the chances, Helen? That's like Amazon Danube.
I know an American called Randy Bishop, Chris. All bets are off.
Anyway, let's have another moment, shall we? Let's go in reverse order. Ben, you're up next.
Me again. Okay.
Two moments in a row.
I'm going to spin off Amon's moment, but we didn't talk about this specific thing, which I thought was really cool, which is when you have the fight between the Watcher and Mega Ultron. Does he have an official name? Helen said Infinite Ultron, which sounded cool. Is that an official thing?
I think it is.
I'm sure they said Ultron something in the interview, but I can't remember and I can't be bothered looking it up.
I'm going to call him Mega Ultron. So in the fight...
Let's go with that.
In the fight between the Watcher and Mega Ultron, I feel like we got some really cool like multiverse imagery, which is Uatu being basically just like hoied through multiple levels of reality and realities kind of fracturing and them sort of appearing on top of one another, but you can sort of smash through them like glass panes, and seeing some of those alternate parallel universes sort of appearing side by side in the same space, I really, really like that. It reminded me quite a bit of His Dark Materials and how they've envisioned it in that show and in the title sequence of that show. It also hits to the power of Mega Ultron, that he can chuck people through realities themselves. And it just felt like a really nice tease. If the way that they're bringing this into the MCU proper is that it's a multiverse story, that we have over the course of everything that we've watched this year sort of cracked open the multiverse to an extent. This felt like our first proper chance to see what that might actually look like in a practical sense. I really enjoyed the way that they presented that. So yes, that would be my moment. That it would be the Watcher being chucked through several shattering panes of reality.
So Ultron, when he becomes like super mega duper Ultron, he's kind of making Thanos look a little bit unambitious, don't you think? Like, the second he gets ultimate, unlimited, infinite power, Thanos just goes, right, I'm going to snap my fingers, I'm going to remove half the population of the universe, and then I'm going to burn stones again so that whenever the universe repopulates itself over time, I'm not going to be able to do this again. So really, this is just a sticking plaster rather than an actual permanent solution.
Exactly. Helen, oh, God. Helen,
I could see Helen was building herself up to that. So, you know, which doesn't, you know, slightly undermines what he was trying to do. But, you know, in the long, you know, it was a nice short-term solution. Well done, Thanos.
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
No. Killing or disappearing half the universe, not well done. Mm-mm. Hard pass.
I think it works, though, with what they do with Ultron here, right? Because in a bad sense, Thanos had a humanity to him. He was a flawed person. It was kind of ideological, but it was also kind of personal at the same time, his whole quest to get the stones and stuff. Whereas Ultron is pure ruthless Android efficiency. Well, Apple efficiency, really, because Android stuff, I feel like, is maybe less reliable.
Oh, yeah. And Android Ultron would have stopped working.
It couldn't have handled the power of the Infinity Stones and would have crumbled immediately. But yeah.
Although having to buy a new Ultron every 2 years is really expensive.
I mean, seriously, guys.
When your current Ultron just stops working for no reason, then you have to take it to the Ultron bar and then.
Palm Ultron kind of connects so seamlessly to the ear Ultrons, and it's just too convenient to get out of that cycle, Chris.
I just feel like you need to broaden your horizons, guys, and look, as Ultron does, beyond your single universe to the multiverse.
Go to a genius bar in a multiverse.
I just feel like maybe don't go to a genius bar because it's the most misnamed place on Earth. Anyway,
hey, those guys are geniuses. Leave them alone. Leave them alone.
I do think that the Thanos thing was, well, I think Thanos gets a kicking in this show, which I obviously enjoyed. But I think that the fact that Ultron is ultimately more kind of efficient at it and has no limits on what he wants to do is a good one. Like, it's clever and it's funny and it points like the difference between those two supervillains, which you don't always get. And I think it goes to the strength of Thanos' characterization in the films and gives us a little bit that we didn't really get from Ultron in the time that we had.
Yeah, I mean, we're all huge fans here of Age of Ultron. We've talked about this before on the podcast, but, you know, I think there's a little bit of rehabilitation of that film going on within the MCU, how important it was to Endgame, for example, how much it factors into the likes of WandaVision, this is where Wanda and Vision met for the first time, all that sort of stuff. It's all in there, where Quicksilver dies. Spoiler alert, by the way, for Age of Ultron. But, you know, I also think that there's an element of, if you were to do a ranking of the MCU villains, I think most people would put Ultron fairly low down the list, despite the fact that I think he's a lot of fun and I think James Spader is having a great time in the role, that the character doesn't really get the chance to make an impact the way that Loki did, or certainly that Thanos does, in regards to his impact on the Avengers. And here you see how formidable he could be.
Yeah. That's always been the case with Ultron. And as much as I love Age of Ultron. that is one thing that frustrated me, because in the comics, you know, Ultron frequently, and in the cartoons, Ultron frequently goes like one on everybody with the Avengers, and most of the time he wins because he is that sort of ruthless. And it was good to see that in What If. And it was just good to, you know, given the interconnected sort of storytelling here, and that they were going to, you know, make this team at the end of the show, you needed a, you know, villain who is worthy enough to sort of have that much of attention so that the Guardians of the Multiverse can come together. And Mega Ultron, excuse me, Ben, is definitely sort of fit the bill in that regard.
Uber Ultron, surely. Ultra Ultron. Come on, Ultra, what are we doing? What are we doing? We're just faffing around here. We're meant to be writers, for the love of God. Ultra Ultron.
No. No, I mean, try saying it three times fast. It's a terrible tongue twister. It doesn't work.
Ultra Ultron, no. Ultra Ultron, Ultra Ultron.
That wasn't fast.
Ultra Ultron. Ben named him Mega Ultron. I'm going to call him Mega Ultron.
Anywho, no. But look, I did miss James Spader's voice in his case. I will say that.
Yes, I did.
You don't realize how good he is at that until you have someone else in the role who was fine, but no James Spader.
All right, so we're going in reverse order. So that means, Helen, it is now your turn to choose a moment.
I enjoyed Thor versus Captain Marvel. I enjoyed it because this, to me, is exactly what a What If show should be doing. It should be giving us ridiculous reasons for superheroes to fight so we can see who would win in a fight. That's the kind of silliness I want to see from this. So I thought that was really fun. It's just a really fun episode as well, which, again, after all the doom and gloom of the previous two or three, in particular, I really felt I needed it at that point. And yeah, Party Thor kind of brought the party. So that was a lot of fun. But him and Captain Marvel kind of slamming each other into various national monuments was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also did something which I wish, you know, when Thor had me on there, he would do more often, which is place me on there on somebody and just, you know, end the fight.
He hasn't done it since the first Thor movie.
No, doesn't he do it to Hulk in The Avengers?
Does he?
He doesn't place it on him. Like, Hulk tries to lift it.
He places it on Loki, but he doesn't...
He doesn't place it on Hulk. Maybe when Jane gets the hammer in Love and Thunder, she'll be smarter about it.
What if Jane gets the hammer in Thor Love and Thunder? Yes, indeed. Good moment. I'm on.
I'm going to take things down a darker path here. Because it is still one of my favorite moments, which is the end of the Doctor Strange-centric episode where he loses his reality, his universe, essentially. Which was very, very impactful and gave me the feeling that I wanted to feel from Infinity War, in just terms of the, you know, nothing can be done. This is irrevocably changed and there's no coming back from this. I feel like that was done very, very effectively. And that entire episode is sort of a character study of Doctor Strange. And then the ending of that was really, really well done and really, really interesting to compare and contrast to the Doctor Strange that we see in MCU Prime as well.
That downbeat ending was my favorite, I think, of all of them. Because it did come as a genuine surprise. I did feel like right will triumph here and you know, restore itself. And they didn't do that. And that was a bit of a shocker. But it was a little bit more emotionally compelling, I think, than the couple of episodes maybe I'd seen before that. And I thought it was a good episode.
Having Cumberbatch be the star of the show and really the star of that episode really gives it that heft. If it had been a bad Cumberbatch sound-alike, I don't think it would quite have worked.
It was interesting who really stepped up in terms of their voice performance. I feel like Cumberbatch is one. I feel that Tom Hiddleston dialed it up a notch, was stunning. And I think Chris Hemsworth almost gave us a different spin on Thor. He was almost a slight, well, certainly for Party Thor, but even otherwise, he was a little bit more outrageous, more loose, more kind of having fun than he had been on screen. And that was really interesting as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. Cumberbatch was, for me, the best MCU sort of voice actor in this, which is not really a surprise considering so he has done that sort of work before. He also obviously Smaug in Destination of Smaug, and he voiced Dormammu in Doctor Strange. So he's well sort of, you know, schooled in the art of voice acting. I think that really came through in the show.
that episode as well. I mean, that was such a downer ending. It was, of all the downer endings in the show, that was the most impactful because it felt like a real culmination of that story. It felt quite shocking. But the thing I loved with that episode, it just made me so excited for Multiverse of Madness, because we've heard for so long that the Doctor Strange sequel is going to be, in its own way, like a Doctor Strange horror movie, which, I mean, stick some horror in the MCU and I'm 100% there. But the fact that this episode was dark, that it was a kind of horror-inflected tale, you had a lot of horror-inflected visuals, the fact that sort of Doctor Strange became more demonic, effectively, as the episode went on, really gave me a sense of what that horror element within the MCU could look like in a Doctor Strange context. And if they can channel some of that into Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, I will be very happy indeed.
I feel like they're already sort of seeding that sort of, you know, the hubris overwhelming Doctor Strange a little bit in with Spider-Man No Way Home and him doing that spell that he probably shouldn't have done. So I would not be surprised if, like, Multiverse of Madness continues that path and sees Strange cross a line that he'll then try and sort of find his way out of. Excited to see that one.
Yeah, there's a void to be filled by an arrogant, goatee bearded know-it-all who constantly makes the wrong decisions. And I think Strange could well step into Tony's shoes in that regard. And also, I think there's a couple of really interesting things about that. You're right. It shows the darkness that is ever just a cigarette paper's width away from intruding on Strange's life. You know, he's battling all the time and working all the time with dark magic, and there's, you know, there's every possibility that if he just makes the wrong choice, that could, you know, be a very corrosive thing that could invade his soul, and once he starts down that dark path, forever will it dominate his destiny. Quite possibly, you never know. Yeah. There's another element as well that I really liked in that episode, and also with some other characters as well, is that it felt that the show was taking advantage of the fact that it was animated to really play up characters and power them up and nerf them almost to their full potential. You know, so Strange Supreme is doing things that, you know, they so far haven't even been able to really even go near in the live action version. Captain Marvel was pretty nerfed up. Thor was pretty nerfed up. There was some good old power amplification going on.
Let the record show that the whole time Chris was doing that, Amon was doing his own Sorcerer Supreme hand waving. It was, you've been practicing that. That was a good look.
You know what I'm
saying? I do think, to Chris's point, that it makes sense that you nerf everybody up, to use that phrase for some reason, in animation, because, you know, the thing with, like, Pixar have this thing about asking about all of their films, why does this need to be done in animation? You know, why does this need to be an animated story as opposed to any other kind of filmmaking? And of course, increasingly nowadays, they can do anything with live action and heavy dollopings of CGI. But this show, I think, does use the full extent of that animation when it goes for these insanely huge, you know, epic multiverse spanning battles. And you're like, yes, that does actually need to be in animation. All right. You've convinced me.
I love it when they do that, because it just feels like closer to the comics. Like Thor, in the first Thor, we get that scene with him and the Frost Giants. I was like, okay, that was cool. But until sort of like Ragnarok, we didn't get, like, Thor is a god, and we didn't really sort of, you know, feel that or see that on screen until Ragnarok. And then in Infinity War, when he gives new meaning to the phrase divine intervention in Wakanda, that is when we fully sort of see Thor come into his...
Do you like that moment?
Well, you've never mentioned it, Amon. That's so weird.
Pretty strange.
A little bit. So yeah, I love it that they do this in animation, and, you know, they constantly escalate that as the series goes on. We get Doctor Strange versus Doctor Strange, then we get Captain Marvel versus Thor, then we get Uatu versus Ultron, and then we get the Guardians of the Multiverse versus Ultron, and the way in which they just continually escalate the cosmic action throughout is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Someone made a point, I think it might have been Ben, or Helen, or Amon. Pick your pick, really. Can't remember who it was. Hedge my bets. Someone made the point that there are a lot of downer episodes in this show, and this is true. This is true. And it kind of lulls you into a false sense of security as well, because the first episode with, you know, Captain Carter and the Hydra Stomper and all that stuff has a downer ending, but it makes sense because it's a riff on the first Avenger, which has, until Infinity War came along, the downer ending in the MCU. I had a date. Oh, it's Steve!
He had a date! Brave little Steve!
No! Episode 2, which is the fun episode with T'Challa as Star-Lord. I don't really recall it having a downer ending. That seems to be quite...
It's pretty full on, but you do see Ego turning up to lift Peter Quill.
Yeah, but that's all right. That's fine. That's okay.
T'Challa saves him in the final episode.
Yeah, T'Challa saves him, so it's not a downer ending at all. And episode 3, of course, has like the Avengers being killed in horrible ways, which is the first really exciting exploration of, oh, this is really different. This is this is not what I was expecting at all. I wasn't expecting Hulk to go out that way, for example. Have they really just killed Tony Stark? Yes, they have, because they hate Tony Stark and they want to kill him at every possible opportunity. But it was episode 4, 5, and 6. There's a run of like downer endings, a Killmonger episode where he kills everybody. There's the zombies episode in which everyone dies, and then just to compound matters, when you think there's a ray of hope, not Hope Van Dyne, but actual hope, at the end of the episode, along comes zombie Thanos and fucks the whole thing up. So there is this run of downer episodes, and I did ask AC Bradley and Brian Andrews about that and why they were trying to bum us out, man. Here is their response.
We did go darker. Tone-wise, that was one of the things that enticed me to do the show. I'd already kind of said goodbye to animation, but this was too good of an opportunity because we could play with every genre and play with all these characters. So that's also why we didn't have a writer's room. I was like, I kind of want to get my fingers in every single episode as much as I can. So we brought on the other writers, Matthew Chauncey, who's a very good friend of mine, incredibly talented writer. It's our third show together. And we were both like, it basically became a contest of like which toys we can each play with and stealing and like what genres we want to do. Like he knows how to write a great heist episode. He's written other episodes like that before and I love them. So he's like, I'm doing T'Challa. I'm taking T'Challa. And I was like, and I, believe it or not, was like, Iron Man is mine. He's like, I know if I try and take Iron Man off you, you will throw him up.
God, I'm going to kill that guy in a bunch of really interesting ways. Just you wait.
So we kind of like, that was the fun of it, was like kind of being able to explore different genres, different tones. Now, when it came to the twist endings, that was pulled directly from the comics. What If was notorious for kind of, in a way, almost proving that the main timeline was the best timeline because everything always ended in disaster. And we wanted to kind of always go to places where the movies would never go, which means killing all the Avengers, zombie Thanos. I hope it wasn't too much for the audience. We didn't mean to, like, you know, gut punch everyone in the last 30 seconds constantly. We also knew we would probably see a lot of these worlds again in episode 9.
Yeah.
But it came from this place of, one, wanting to do right by the comics, and two, just wanting to go to places that we just knew you'll never see in Avengers 5.
Yeah. And also, like, in animation, you don't often see, now we're going to see lots of stuff where animation gets way more, you know, like adult or even TV-14, you know, it's not just for like kids, you know, and throughout my career, it's always been studios just thinking that everything stops at age 7 or age 10 and not allowing anything to be animated that's beyond that, unless it was like hardcore, crazy, violent, whatever. And then that just goes the other end of dumb because it's, dude, now they're just glorifying a bunch of stuff because they can, and maybe the stories aren't that great. So, you know, ever since college, me and everyone I went to school with, you know, we wanted more out of animation. It's taken all of us a long time to get to a place where we can have influence and try to make things a little, push it, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
This was a perfect opportunity to do so. It's like, we can have things that go darker than the movies. We can have things that go a little bit more comedy than the movies. You know what I mean? Here is the grab bag. You know, it's like the baseline is the Marvel movies. And then we can go in different directions from that action adventure baseline, you know, that TV-14 baseline.
And, Scott Lang's head in a jar.
Yeah.
That's in the original zombie comics. We had to do that. We had to.
Okay, so that was more stuff from AC Bradley and Brian Andrews. And now it is time. We're going to do a speed round.
Okay.
real quick. I'm going to mix it up this time, so I'm going to come to Helen first on this one. Pick another moment.
The Thanos joke in the Star-Lord episode. In the Black Panther Star-Lord episode. Now, yes, T'Challa in this episode is a bit of a Mary Sue and can do no wrong and is improbably successful at everything he turns his hand to. On the other hand, the idea of him
Paul Atreides.
Hey. On the other hand, the idea of him talking Thanos out of genocide is wonderful and hilarious, and I adore it. It was the best joke in the entire series.
And James is furious about the whole thing.
Of course.
Yeah, he wants genocide, goddammit. And he will not stop until he gets some.
Yeah, I've been meaning to talk to you about that. We should really, like, stop him, form some kind of, I don't know, Avengers or something.
I think I say we let this play out and see where the chips fall.
I have concerns about that strategy, I'm just saying.
Podvengers assemble!
Guardians of the Podiverse. Let's make it happen. Let's take down James. Let's take him down.
I'm there.
All right, good, 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 good. I'm on. Next.
Queen Ramonda. General Ramonda in What If Killmonger Rescued Tony Stark was awesome to the power of awesome multiplied by awesome, and I want to see it in live action.
Is that awesome cubes?
Thank you.
What is that? That's a lot of awesome.
I love that you showed your working.
It was a lot of awesome.
He did. He had a little graph and everything. It was quite something. He clearly spent some time on it.
I do like it when royals turn out to be, you know, generals as well.
Badass.
Like Leia and so on. But yeah. The only problem with this entire show, what I thought was that, one of the problems with this entire show was there wasn't enough Okoye, but I did appreciate Ramonda getting her moment in the sun, as it were.
Mm. Yes.
What did we think of, because as I said earlier on, this was Chadwick Boseman's swan song. Mm. This was the last performance from Chadwick Boseman is in this show. And what did we make of that, and what do we make of the various incarnations of T'Challa all the way through the season?
I thought it was really, really good. I loved him in episode 2, which is the one where he gets the most to do. I just think he gets to display so many different sort of colors of T'Challa in that episode, from sort of the humor to just the righteous heart and his good nature. And I feel like they did a good job of this across the entire series with a lot of characters, but with T'Challa, especially in that episode, they nailed down the essence of what makes him such a good T'Challa. I feel like that episode nailed in the most. There are a couple of episodes where he sort of goes through harder times, shall we say. There's one in which he sort of dies, and you know that was just hard. It's hard to watch given
reality,
what's taking place in our world. Yeah. And it was really because I didn't feel like that he died actually in the moment. It was only when I saw the coffin and like the scene afterwards, I was like, oh crap, they really, he's dead in this reality. But I thought that was sort of, very effective as a moment. But yeah, across the entire series, Chadwick was great and he'll be very, very missed in
and
this
him
role.
Getting to be so funny and so loose, especially as you say in that second episode, because in the films, especially, well, he comes into Civil War and T'Chaka dies, and then throughout Black Panther, he's wrestling with a lot of stuff. He's wrestling with legacy, and he gets kind of cool action moments, and he gets to do a couple of quips and stuff. But he's carrying a lot in that film. And part of the kind of what if of this all is that if he gets plucked off by the Ravagers, he's off in space, sort of gadding about and getting to be a bit of an adventurer and stuff. So letting him play all the strains of T'Challa that we know, but without that baggage, with that lightness, with that playfulness, but still carrying a through line. I thought his voice performance was one of the best in the show as well, alongside Tom Hiddleston and people who kind of brought the essence of what they portrayed on screen and maybe amped it up a bit to complement the animation. I thought he was really, really excellent.
Mm. Speaking of humor, that moment, episode 2, when it's Korat versus T'Challa for a bit, is so funny. I love Jaimon Hounsou in that scene, in particular. He's fantastic in all across the episodes. Just every line delivery, he nails it, and basically every other one got a big laugh from me. But that moment in particular was awesome.
And we also have A.C. Bradley and Brian Andrews talking about T'Challa and how they use T'Challa throughout the season, and in fact the discussion and internal debate they had about how they showed T'Challa dying at the hands of Killmonger in episode 6, given, of course, the tragic passing of Chadwick Boseman in real life. So here we go. Have a listen. Yeah, especially given how Killmonger had treated his own T'Challa.
Exactly. Yeah. And we had some more moments in there that kind of addressed a little bit of that stuff. But for time, we had to cut a few of them. And then also just the way they interacted in lieu of Chadwick's passing. There was some banter that they had that we felt that didn't sit the same way. And we really didn't do that for much of anything in regards. Everything kind of worked the way it was supposed to work. But that was like, there was only one that was like, oh, in hindsight, yeah, we don't want them to have that exchange. It just doesn't leave a good taste in your mouth. So there was a couple of that stuff that we had to.
And in a way, you know, that even what happens in episode 6 when Killmonger does take out T'Challa, did Chadwick's passing give you pause about even showing that, even going there?
Yes. There was a bit of pause for a moment just because we were like, oh my goodness. But then I was sitting on it for a while. And, you know, I think, you know.
Hold on, Brian. I'm going to cut you off, but we should pause that.
Go for it.
We already had Vanimatic locked when Chadwick passed. We were like, this is, script was long written. It was at the animation house. Sorry, Brian.
It's true. It was like done. It's like the animation, you know, the show was happening. We were getting scenes back, animation. So we're like way down the way. And the idea of like losing that episode seemed like what it would be a lot. And I remember Brad and I were talking about it a little bit, and I had mentioned something, you know, I was of the mind that's like, no, because when this comes out, it's going to be quite, right now it's raw because it just happened, but a year from now we're going to feel differently. We're going to want to see as much of them as we can. And I think Kevin was in the same mind, because he eventually then told us that, you know, Kevin was just like, you know, Chadwick was fully aware of these episodes, he understood these stories, and he wanted these to be out, so we're going to do it, you know. So it's fine. It's just it does hit differently when you watch it. But then there's the beautiful ending where he meets, you know, T'Challa in the ancestral plane, and T'Challa has these very, you know, choice words for him, you know, these very wise words. It's just so great. And then we also knew that, like in episode 6, right, there's that moment where they're in the thing. He's like, you know, in my culture, death is not the end. It's like, we had no idea, but that it comes across so differently now.
Yeah.
You know? So we just wanted to keep as much of him in as possible and not have a knee jerk reaction right at the moment. Yeah. And I'm glad that Kevin was like kind of the steady hand on the tiller. You know, he's just like, don't worry, guys, it's going to be fine.
Okay. So that was more AC Bradley and Brian Andrews. And we're about to wrap this up, folks. We're about to bring this bad boy home. Are there any other moments, anything else you want to get off your chest about season 1 of What If?
I mean, I know you brought this up very briefly before, but can we talk about the fact they exploded the Hulk? Hulk exploded. Yeah. I was watching that episode thinking, oh, this is really interesting. We've talked about them reclaiming lesser loved MCU movies through other bits of storytelling. So you think of Age of Ultron and Thor the Dark World, and you go, oh, this is the first time they're really bringing the Incredible Hulk back into the fray. Oh, they're doing something. Oh my god, they blew up the Hulk.
Oh my god, they blew up the Hulk.
Which you can have your
honey, I blew up the Hulk.
They should have called the episode that would have been great.
It might have been a spoiler. Also, you couldn't call because everyone was what if, and then a sentence. So that would have been, what if, honey, I blew up the Hulk? And that wouldn't have made any sense.
I still would have accepted it. It would have been great.
What if, honey, I blew myself? And it was just Tobias Funke.
When he explodes, you see the little denim shorts go flying.
Yes, he's a never nude. That's what Bruce Banner is, essentially. Bruce Banner is a never nude. So the connections between Bruce Banner and Tobias Funke are huge. And now whenever we next see Mark Ruffalo in the MCU, I want to see him dress up as Mrs. Featherbottom and infiltrate the Avengers compound, but in an attempt so that, you know, but obviously thinking that his disguise is perfect and they can't see through the disguise, and they all know, obviously, as Bruce Banner in a dress. And who's left? Going up to the new Captain America, Sam Wilson, and asking if he's ever popped a banger into his mouth. That is what I want Bruce Banner to do now in the MCU going forward. Pop a banger in your mouth, Mr. Wilson.
Well, I must say that She-Hulk is going in a different direction than I expected, but it sounds entertaining.
Oh, Bruce, you blowhard. There's so many poorly chosen words in that sentence. Oh, I love Tobias.
But,
anyway.
But they exploded the Hulk. And it was quite visceral when it happened. It let out like a shockwave in the show and in audiences everywhere, I think.
Well, as we know, Hulk is kind of immortal. To an extent, there's a comic book about that as well. But I feel very strongly that given time and given his healing factor and his sheer will and his sheer desire not to be killed, that the Hulk would have T-1000 himself and he would have gradually all his component parts and bits and bits of blood and veins and, you know, his pancreas and his lower intestine, all that sort of stuff would have gradually...
Now that
looped back together again.
That is the episode I would have liked to see. Like a really experimental episode, and it's a single shot over the course of half an hour. And for the first 5 minutes, you go, I don't think anything's happening. It's like slow cinema, but gradually the Hulk reforms in front of your eyes.
What if the Hulk was a pile of goo? What if Hulk was a widely dispersed pile of goo?
A widely dispersed pile of goo, and then he has compelling. To kind of he has to. Reconfigure himself.
Sure.
He has to come back. It's like the Krypton factory. He has to solve his own puzzle. That's what I want to see from the Hulk.
And then he could have had just a single line of dialogue. He could have had an Aunt May style, what the fuck? And that could have been your first and last line of the episode. Cut to credits.
Guys, it's a good pitch, but I gotta say, would not watch.
I'm not convinced. Mind you, isn't there a comic where Hulk rips Wolverine in half? And throws one half like across a mountain, and the other half has to crawl and get his legs. So it's basically like that
works for me. That works for me. Hulk's healing factor is something that hasn't really been fully explored in the MCU. Why Banner still has a dodgy arm? It may be testament to the power of the Infinity Stones, and they really did properly, do a number on him and fry his arm proper. Hmm. But I don't know. He should at least be able to play softball.
Softball, but not hardball.
Not yet. Okay. Not yet. Anyway, is there anything else? Because I've got to wrap this up.
I think that's good.
I've got to talk to Cyclops.
There's one moment we haven't talked about in the final episode. Thor chanting Vegas as he's trying to kill Ultron is awesome. It's so funny. I love that moment.
All right. Okay. So that is season one of What If. It is done. It is in the can. We know there's going to be a season two. Very quickly, who would you like to see more of? And what do you expect to see from season two?
I obviously want to see more of Captain Carter. Duh. And I would like to see more just wild, unconnected swings for the fences. Just give me crazy stuff. That's what I want.
I want a bit of Shang-Chi and a bit more fun.
Ooh.
Is what I would like.
I want more Doctor Strange. I feel like there's, very few limits, especially in the animated realm of what you can do with that character. And given that they've done such a good job with all the stuff that's focused on him in this season, I feel like they can sort of take that up a few degrees again.
That's very interesting. That is very, very interesting indeed. Shang-Chi, that's a very, very good shout. I would say that the Guardians were a bit undersold in this entire season.
It's becoming a theme.
It is becoming a bit of a theme, but Peter...
They do have their own Christmas special coming up, plus a film. So
this is true. They do. They do. But, we had a Dave Bautista sound-alike. We had a Chris Pratt sound-alike. We had a Gamora sound-alike. Hard to tell. I can't even remember if Groot was in it, but if it was, whether they got League Root or just a sound-alike, I don't really know. But I feel that they could maybe be involved a little bit more than they were going forward. But, more standalone episodes, more craziness, giving characters a bit more of a spotlight and maybe just taking some of the, as we said in the spoiler special, taking some of those kind of fun moments from the MCU and kind of exploring them a little bit more. As I said, what if Thor had been given the right directions on the tube or completely wrong directions and ended up in High Barnet instead of Greenwich, and then your elf bloke won at the end of Thor the Dark World, and it was all Thor's fault because he was given terrible
Malekith's
directions.
Back. Fantastic.
Malekith, that's his name, yes. Malekith the unconvincing. Malekith the unmemorable. I couldn't remember him, so him. Anyway, I've got to run because I've got to talk to Cyclops. So, True story, folks. Check out this week's Empire podcast, or possibly next week's, for more Cyclops-related fun. But until then, that is it for now. That's what I call the very best of What If... Volume 3. I hope you've enjoyed listening to it every bit as much as we've endured making it. Keep them peeled, of course, for more Empire podcasts coming your way. We have the regular podcast out every single Friday. We have podcast specials that come out every now and again. And if you don't already subscribe to the Spoiler Special channel, then I can heartily, heartily recommend it. We have incredible spoiler specials in there, over 200 and counting. You get access to the entire archives. Most of those have wonderful interviews. Wonderful interviews. I did most of them, so I'll just say competent interviews with the filmmakers behind some of the biggest movies of the last 10 years, and ones that don't have us four giggling idiots instead, or just a compendium of four giggling idiots in case we weren't available. So yeah, it's well worth your time, and there's loads of stuff coming your way over the next few weeks, including Halloween Kills with David Gordon Green, The Last Duel with Nicole Holofcener, Venom Let There Be Carnage with Andy Serkis, Last Night in Soho with Edgar Wright and Christy Wilson-Kern. The list goes on, folks. So come on in. The water is lovely. But anyway, however we meet again, until then, until that auspicious occasion, it is time to say goodbye to my three colleagues of such lethal cunning. Squadcast names, Party Thor... It's Ben Travis.
Vegas! Goodbye.
Goodbye, Ben. Goodbye. It is goodbye from Warman Supreme, Amon Warman.
Peace.
Wow.
Okay. He's casting more spells at us, people. Be afraid. Be afraid.
Yes. And it's goodbye from Captain Peggy America Carter.
Toodaloo.
Helen O'Hara. Which is reference, that's the end game, isn't it?
Ant-Man, yeah.
Ant-Man,
Captain
yeah.
Captain Steve, America, Rogers.
Yes, yeah. Oh, dear. Anyway, and it's goodbye from me. Where's Tom Hiddleston when you need him? The man's fluent in Latin. Qui custodit vigilem, which apparently, according to Google Translate, is who watches the watcher. So there you go. There you go. If that's wrong, then blame Google Translate, or Googlem Translatum, as I believe it is in Latin. Anyway, what? Anyway, I'm off now to scrape up bits of the Hulk, put them into Petri dishes, and just see what happens. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time. Bye.